Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 391.
This week on the podcast, we had to pass the American Rescue Plan to find out what was in it.
Plus, Joe Biden discovers that a regular speech can also get you good ratings.
And Andrew Cuomo may get a crash course in New York's exploitive rental laws.
Plus, Nevada is now a place for socialists instead of Harry Reid.
And the cancel culture debate confusingly gives Ted Cruz an opportunity to promote reading.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Did you know that we're part of a burnout generation?
I mean, listen, I hadn't read the book, but yes, I did still know.
You'd heard about the burnout though, right?
I had.
Here's what happened. Friend of the podcast, Kat Kelvin, sent me a book. It was written by that lady that had that BuzzFeed article that went viral that was about millennial burnout. Mm-hmm. And now I'm getting the joy of raging against private equity, which is one of my favorite places to direct my rage.
Obviously.
I mean, I love when someone can write a chapter about how private equity has screwed over America, because that A, confirms what I've always known, which is A, that the economy is fake, and that anything anyone tells you about the economy is a made up fact that is convenient to them. Uh-huh. And B, it allows all of us to place the blame for our increasingly precarious lives on the shoulders of Mitt Romney, which is where I believe that blame belongs. So remember how when Mitt Romney first came into our lives, we used to wonder aloud, like, what his job entailed, like, when he walked into the Bain Capital offices, like, who he called, like what his first action of the day is or was?
Yeah, I do remember this.
I still think about that all the time. Yeah. Because I know, like, what sort of generally your day is if you're a senator. Like, I get kind of like the outline of what your responsibilities are and, like,
yeah,
what
sure.
your first thing might be and who you call and whatever. You call donors. Yeah. The outline of your day is meeting with those donors behind closed doors in an off-campus arrangement. And then yeah. you, like, chat with your staff about whatever while they do all your work. But I don't, like, a private equity firm is, like, designed specifically to just, like, destroy large companies and make them unpleasant places to work. And if that is your career, like, I don't really understand how you go about doing it, but I do understand that that is what many of the people who are now in the ruling class, in yep. the direct sense, are used to do. In any case, it's not a read where you'll, like, necessarily have revelations where you're like, I didn't realize this was happening, because you, like, live in the world. Like, you,
right.
you know how precarious work is becoming. Brent and I talk all the time about being angry that even in his very stable job, like, health insurance, you know, changes can, like,
changing, right.
you know,
all
ruin everything.
Yeah.
And that is your compensation, and no one acts like it's your compensation. And so everyone acts like you can just stick around with health insurance benefits just, like, anytime you want,
right.
as if that's not affecting people's salaries. But
yeah.
this book has, like, a larger view that's more about, like, not just what millennials are doing now, but, like, why we entered the job market ready to, like, find careers that we loved and were passionate about, and why,
mm-hmm.
like, what that, like, acute disappointment of getting into the job market and finding that not only was it no one's job is good, like, no one has a fun job, like, sorry about it.
Right.
But also, like, the basic protections that made work tolerable as a way of life were also gone. And so mm-hmm. I feel like more than me reading it, maybe, like, every boomer needs to read it.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. Like, when you were talking about how we wouldn't probably find any revelations in there, this would probably be revelatory for some people. And the people who it would be revelatory for are the ones that would need to read it.
That's right. But I feel like in order to recommend it to people, I have to have read it. And so that's where we are.
Great.
In any case, I'm enjoying it, but also not enjoying it because it's horrifying.
Yeah.
But also feeling validated. So that's great.
Yeah.
In any case, moving on to actual news.
Yes.
They did it, you guys. Just in time for the unemployment extension to run out in mid-March.
They got it.
The Democrats
there.
Finally got there. Now, they got
Just
there
got
with
there.
Zero Republican votes. So
yep.
any time that you heard that they needed to make this palatable to literally anybody who was not a Democrat was, in fact, a lie, because there was not a single Republican willing to vote for it at any stage.
I know.
So anything that got bargained out of it was bargained out by Democrats, ultimately. Just know that to yourself.
Right, exactly.
If you want to be mad at somebody, it's Joe Manchin.
Right. Although I am starting to see, I think that I think that there were some things that are smart about this bill, because there's, we're going to, you know, we talked a little bit last week about what was in there. You know, we mentioned it sort of like in our rundown item on this, but like there were, I've seen a few people use the Nancy Pelosi quote from back during the ACA about how we had to pass it to find out what was in it. It seems like we've been finding out a lot of what is in it this week after it got signed. That's not to say we couldn't have found out before, but I feel like they're doing a good job of highlighting it right now.
Well, so, that's really all they have to go on. Like, right. The one thing that they have to do now, that's the only job of the Democrats, is to now tell everyone what was in it.
Right.
Because it's good stuff.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. And I think once they highlight, I think the thing that they should be doing additionally while they're highlighting it, and they probably won't do this because they are still attempting to sort of make nice to Republicans who obviously are not willing to make nice with them at all. But like, you know, experts are saying that the bill in its entirety is going to bring down childhood poverty by 50%. Like, they should be highlighting that, which I'm certain that they will, because the Biden and the Harris and the entire cabinet are going on the road with this thing. They should also ask people, as a follow-up question, why do you think Republicans don't want to bring down childhood poverty by 50%? Right? Like,
I fear that they won't
compare and contrast themselves maybe as much as I would like them to, because that's not really what they're good at.
I have a plan for them to both appear to be bipartisan and also just like nail the Republicans on this, because overall, like, we have obviously like individual quibbles with parts of this legislation.
We've been complaining about it for months.
We've been complaining about this entire time. Overall, this is a piece of legislation that, unlike the past recovery bills, is not just like entirely give away to corporations, and has like a ton of stuff that's good for people. And that really should be what the Democrats are known for. And it's so rarely what they deliver on. So it's really impressive that they were able to deliver this. I give a lot of, I feel like when something like this happens, even though this is not who I normally like sort of credit with these things, like I give a lot of credit on the House side to Nancy Pelosi, because she just like makes stuff happen in the House that then makes it inevitable in the Senate. But I also want to say that this is what a competitive primary gets you. If anyone who wants to say that it is not important that Bernie Sanders ruins lives by running for president, who wants to say that the 10 presidential candidates was too many, who wants to say any of that and wants to pretend like, well, if we ended up with Joe Biden anyway, why did we attack him? It's because this is so much farther to the left than what Joe Biden has ever campaigned on or has ever even thought to himself personally in his life. And it, the reason it became inevitable is because it became popular. And the reason it became popular is because we had a competitive primary.
Even
the New York Times
agree.
Admitted it. And they never want, they are loath to admit anything that the left has ever done.
Yeah.
But even the New York Times was like, this includes a huge number of policies that were advocated for by the left that pulled Joe Biden to the left.
Totally.
And that
is
what that's for.
I agree. Anyway, I mean, you have to.
No, my idea for bipartisanship before we continue is daylight savings. They want to get rid of time change. Everyone in Earth agrees that that's a good idea. That's a bipartisan policy. It was bipartisan when we did it in California, and it can be bipartisan federally. And then they've worked with Republicans.
We're recording this podcast earlier than we often do. And the first thing that I texted Lila when I woke up this morning was that daylight savings time could eat a big bag of dicks. Because
that's right. Which it can.
It can.
Or I would contend regular time.
Really?
Regular time can. Daylight savings time is the greatest if you don't have to switch to daylight savings time.
Oh, well, right.
Because it makes the evenings glorious.
That's what I meant. Yes. Right.
But yeah, we should be on permanent daylight savings times, because who wants to, who cares about the morning? The morning is so unpleasant already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The evening is when people are happy.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about what's in it.
No, yeah, we'll talk about what's in it, because we told you some things last week. We talked about the child tax credit last week. It also raises the child care tax credit. So it's going to cover up to half of the cost of child care expenses, like to $4,000 per child and $8,000 total, and make it refundable. So like that is huge.
This is one of those policies that like that's a huge amount of money. And that's important because child care is incredibly expensive. This is one of those policies like the ACA cutoffs where I have to also chuckle to myself, because this doesn't even cover a third of the cost of childcare in any major city.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and I was, maybe now's as good a time to talk about it as any, because I was going to wait until the end. But like, you know, we were talking before the podcast, and I was mentioning that I had listen to this interview with John Nichols from The Nation, who was talking about this, and he was talking about like how great this bill was in so many instances. And, you know, and he's a big lefty, right? And he obviously sort of like had similar quibbles that we did, but he put it in an interesting way where he talked about how the Democrats really sort of like look at problems from a sort of like managerial standpoint, where they can sort of like look at all of these sort of like individual problems and then assess them and say, here are some things that are going to make them better. And across the board, everything that's in here, even the things that we don't like or don't go far enough, are going to make it better. But the problem is that it's like you said, they never look and assess a problem and then figure out like the actual solution to
like
it,
how to
right?
solve
like
it.
if we know how much money it's going to cost like in a large city to cover childcare, then like why aren't we doing that at least until the end of the pandemic? Right?
And as you mentioned before the podcast, if we can cut child poverty in half, could we cut it in full?
Right. Like if we're passing like there's, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars in here for healthcare, right? But like we have. Even with all of
it's
that amount
cut
of money,
the rate
we have chosen to continue to leave people, you know, millions of people uninsured and underinsured, even with this. So it's like it's a lot of half measures, which like are half measures better than
no measures?
Then,
of course.
Yes. And that sort of like continues to be the Democratic way. And it's why the left always gets mad at them, because it's sort of like, why do we have to just like spent all of our political will to pass a $2 trillion bill, and we've like, you know, made things in some instances much better, but like in many instances sort of like better around the margins. And it's like,
this is what, when I, you know, Thomas Frank's latest book, that, what is it called?
Yeah.
Like populism, no, or something
no.
like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's really about how the Democrats kind of evolved into like a class of a party of technocrats instead
of
a party of leaders. And so because they specifically try to associate big ideas with the far right instead of allowing that the far left and the far right both have big ideas, some of them are bad, some of them are good. But they discredit big ideas as being unrealistic and too expensive and whatever. And because of that, they make it sound like big ideas come from idiots instead of from people who just have a different governing approach. I think that's what they find so threatening about the Sanders movement, is it's a movement that's focused on big ideas instead of the policies that make those big ideas happen. And they want to sort of convince you that you have to understand the details of the policies in order to have any ideas. And that's actually not your job as a constituent. That's the job of government once they decide to tackle a big idea. And so the Democrats sort of approach everything backwards, where instead of saying, how could we cut child poverty in full?
Right.
They're like, here's an idea that will cut child poverty in half.
Yes.
We won't ask what could cut it in full. That's not a question we're going to ask.
Right.
What we will stay and say instead is, we've thought of a specific idea and that will cut it in half. So I would contend that you need both of those things.
Yes,
you need, you need goals. You don't.
Yep.
You need ideas for how to accomplish those goals. And that's why I've always said that Hillary Clinton would make a brilliant chief of staff. Because she is somebody who cares deeply about coming up with those ideas, you know, with the little ideas that accomplish the goals. Not the little, you know, but the technocratic ideas. She's a technocrat. She does not have vision.
She's not
at least as a political figure. She doesn't
stake
out bold positions and actually think, how do I get to those bold positions? She thinks, well, if I'm on the continuum to this idea, how do I get to the next step of that idea? And you have to have both of those things. But ideally, the person controlling messaging has the big ideas, and the person controlling like actual government function is the one with the small ideas. And like they do it backwards, where like the people communicating the ideas are the small idea people. And then the big idea people are the ones who are having to fight to make the small ideas slightly better. Like,
yeah, totally.
In any case, thank you, Bernie Sanders.
So additionally, a 15% increase in SNAP benefits. It includes loan assistance. This is a good one. It includes loan assistance for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers who belong to groups that have faced ethnic or racial discrimination. And this amount of money actually that is in here for this amounts to the largest amount of money that we've ever offered specifically to Black farmers.
And that's maybe a group of people that, in appointing Tom Vilsack to be ag sec, were not necessarily getting the treatment
they
deserved.
Right. Yes. 86. This one's huge. $86 billion for to save pension plans. I mean, this is has been a huge Democratic priority forever. They've been talking about it for, I mean, literal, you know, over a decade now at this point, decades.
Can you think of anything more 90s in America than destroying people's pension plans? Like, first of all, don't even expand pension plans. Don't even just save them, but like give other people, you know, give new people pension plans.
Yeah,
but also totally. Like there was something I think so infuriating about the implication that a promise that is made to you about your secure retirement as a worker, and nobody gets a pension who hasn't worked for 1 million years for a company or for the government or for whatever, like you have to work for an employer forever to get a pension plan. So these are all people that like give their whole lives to a career. And then there was like an era where we were just okay being like, you might not get a retirement. Sorry.
Right.
Like that idea just like boggles the mind.
Wild. Yeah.
In any case, there's rental assistance money in.
Yes.
The bill, $22 billion in rental assistance, and also some of it, I think, for landlords and property owners.
Yeah, I think there's a fund in there for
to make sure.
But, I mean, that's huge because I think that they have been, and I understand why they did it this way. I mean, like, I think a lot of people have been sort of, like, looking for, you know, rent and mortgage cancellation, and I think that they have sort of attempted to figure out how to do that without just saying that they canceled those payments because I think that they probably thought that that might be a political loser for them. I would disagree with them on that because like everybody is a renter or a mortgage payer.
In the whole country.
Right. So I think they kind of like are getting around to really essentially trying to make sure that folks don't get kicked out of their homes. And I that was obviously has been a huge worry since the onset of this, especially, you know, these people who, there are people who haven't paid rent since last February at this point.
Right. And what are they supposed to suddenly have $20,000 lying around that they can pay the rent with? Like they're not going to pay it with $1,400 checks.
No, they're
but
not.
Also, I think this is probably an area where we're going to have to continue to see some additional funding.
This does not end that problem, I don't think, probably.
No,
people
this
will fall
problem
through the
is,
cracks of this plan and not qualify for it.
This problem also,
ways,
I think, is it's going to be so much bigger than they're expecting it to be because there are so many people who are only sort of marginally holding on to their
homes. I have
homes.
A feeling they don't know the extent of people who... And there's no way for the federal government to know how many people have or have not paid their... certainly their rent. They may know who has and hasn't paid their mortgage since they own most of those mortgages. So that, but, which would be the reason that they would be able to cancel them. But,
that's right.
Anyway, so there's like over $500 million for like the arts and humanities, which is, you know, I mean, like,
imagine that.
I mean,
wouldn't it be nice to have arts?
I was going to say, I mean, I feel like we've forgotten about, like, the previous president certainly didn't care about fucking culture, for God's sake.
No.
I mean,
well, also,
unless
like,
it was
just
white
like,
supremacist KKK culture,
that's true.
Essentially.
Things that, like, make life worth living, which I feel like we've been so focused on, like, survival for the last year that there has also been a kind of opportunity for government to kind of trim out of its budget the things that, like, make a place worthwhile to live, like that, you know, like that just make life worth living. So I'm pleased, and that is in a Republican bill, that's money that would have gone directly to corporate relief. So just know that that was money that only went to the arts, which we all benefit from. It wasn't going to go to something else that we all benefit from. It was going to go to corporate relief if it weren't for the Democrats.
Exactly.
Just know that.
Money
for childcare providers, which is sort of continues along with the when they have a lot, you know, there's so many additional challenges now to being a childcare provider that.
Well, and also they were, I mean, so many of them were out of work
and,
because, I mean, you know, kids were at home and they couldn't be in large settings like that. And so, I mean, they've essentially not been working, many of them. $40 billion set aside for higher education, half of which is reserved for financial aid. And then interestingly, they also included a provision which a lot of people think is sort of in there in an attempt to allow it to be easier for Biden to eliminate student debt, because basically it requires, or it doesn't require beneficiaries to pay taxes on canceled loans. So people think that that is sort of like a starter for him to be able to at least cancel some student loan. Now, he's going to choose to not cancel enough of it because we know that to be the case because he has already said so. He said 10,000 and he got asked at one of his town halls about $50,000 specifically. And he was like, that's not going to be happening. So
here's what I would also say about that, though, which is that is another reason to have a primary. I mean, that's another benefit of primaries is I have a suspicion that we're not going to get $50,000 because he's going to be an asshole about it. And if Chuck Schumer is touting $50,000, that's a conservative estimate. So keep that in mind. But we're going to get more than 10, I bet. And it's going to be because Bernie Sanders ran against him for president. You know, we're going to get more than 10 potentially because the head of the budget committee is going to be a person who believes in canceling more than 10.
Right. And Biden will, if it's 25, then Biden's going to sign. He's not going to send it back and say, give me 10. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I think you're right. There's $28 billion for, in grants for restaurants, which is huge. And like, so huge that like, I mean, the fact that like we're helping private businesses with that one was liked by Republicans. Now they all voted no, but like Republicans liked this one so much that, GOP Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi was touting it on Twitter and like immediately got dragged because it's like, what at the fuck?
So great,
you voted against
it.
This, you asshole.
Well, and I feel like this is a point where if you are a Democrat and you want to be a sneak, which you should want to be because these people are sneaks, go out there and tell their constituents that they voted against saving your favorite restaurants.
Totally.
This is, they had the opportunity to vote to give money to directly to businesses, their favorite thing to do. Yep. Cut the people out entirely, had put that money directly into businesses, and they chose not to.
And then we told you last week about the $350 billion that's going to state and local governments, but that also includes tribal governments. And this, that amount of money that can go to them amounts to the largest payments that we've ever made to tribal governments as well. So, again, you know, I feel like good work on a lot of this for them. And to your point about sort of like pushing people, I think a lot of these things made it in there specifically because progressives thought like some of these things would be good ideas. You know, I mean, we talk all the time about how Bernie Sanders is sort of the amendment king. And I'm not saying any of these specifically were his. Maybe they were. I don't know. But I mean, I think a lot of these sort of like different parts and pieces were added because somebody on our side, you know, either snuck it in or begged, borrowed, and pleaded or, you know,
or
like did whatever.
Or demonstrated in a primary that there is electoral power in these ideas. I think part of the reason that that progressives have lost in the decades worth of attempts by progressives to do stuff is because they haven't been in a position to demonstrate electoral power. The progressives have electoral power right now. They command 30 to 40% of the Democratic electorate. And these are ideas that are getting more popular with everyone else every day. And the rest of the Democratic electorate is on the Hillary Clinton model. They think these are good ideas and they feel like, oh, they're impractical and I don't know how we'll do it. And because I don't know how we'll do it, I, a person who's not an expert in this, can't conceive of agreeing to an idea that I don't know the specifics of how we're going to get there, even though that's, again, I would contend not your job as a constituent. But you have to have the ability to demonstrate that there are consequences to not also serving the left in a bill like this. And I think that they did a good job of that, not just the Sanders movement, but all of these House victories for progressives. And the fact that, like, I think the progressive caucus in the House, because they slightly reorganized and because they had an influx of new members and because they're trendy right now, suddenly was able to also say some things and make some demands that, you know, were beneficial to the House debate. We're often good ideas die in the House, not because nobody in the House supports them, but because no one supports anything in the House. And so mayhem allows everyone to do nothing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it just, like, if you're a person who wonders what all of that was ever for, and we have tried, I think, in the past to explain what all of that kind of, you know, what all of it is for, even when we've lost major elections. Like, this is a perfect example of what all of that was for. Like, why your time volunteering with Sanders or Warren or whoever was not wasted.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I feel good about this legislation. And also, you know, at one point, Anand said, maybe Joe Biden, by circumstance, will be forced to be a transformative president, sort of against his will. Like, he'll be dragged by the circumstances to be this most progressive president that there ever has been. And this was, like, a good down payment on that idea.
I think so, too.
You know, I don't, like, this was something that he was very obviously dragged against his will through some
of
this.
He totally was.
You know, this was much bigger and more expansive than he would have ever proposed on his own. And that's great.
Yeah.
And it would be great if he is a transformative president despite himself.
Yep.
essentially.
Well, and he also, Biden even himself, when they were at the, and I had forgotten about this, but like at the, he did a speech like in the Rose Garden with like Chuck and Nancy, like after he signed it. I think it was before actually his address that night or whatever, but very early in his comments, thanked Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, well,
not for pushing him necessarily, but for like helping to make a case as to like why so many of these things were important. But yeah. Like, I think he himself, you know, is never going to acknowledge that he was like drugged to the left. But like, I think he,
right.
I think even he knows that it's happening, you know,
that is what it's going to take to meet the moment. And he is somebody who's going to look for sort of some plausible deniability by pretending he has to be bipartisan all the time.
Right.
But like this moment doesn't call for that because right. It turns out you can't do anything to get Republican votes. So
right.
You don't.
Well, I think that's
a strategic blunder on their part.
That's an important secondary lesson that I think that they have probably learned.
Right.
Here, that
literally
I think
that do whatever
going,
you want.
They're going
you
to have
2 years to do whatever you want.
Right. And also, I think that they are now going to be able to I think that they should start bringing things to a vote that we know that 90% of the country is in favor mm-hmm. of. And it seems like they are learning. I mean, if I could just ask one thing of Democrats, it's just sort of like to continue to learn here, take a note,
yeah.
like realize that Republicans are not going to vote with you. I see that the House has already passed a gun control measure and Chuck Schumer is like, we are going to take that up. Obviously, the Republicans are going to use the filibuster on this, you know, like, and make them, you know, I mean, like, bring these things up. And that I always felt like was going to be the importance of having control of the Senate, besides being actually able to pass things, was just being able to decide what these people had to vote on. And I think we could really hammer the Republicans right now by voting on some things that, like, we know that the American people are, like, overwhelmingly in favor of. And I think that'll be good. I think
it also
into the midterms.
Puts some good pressure on their own caucus, because, you know, remember when everyone was going on about how Kamala Harris had the most progressive voting record in the Senate, and I was like, that isn't a real
thing.
They don't vote on anything in the Senate. Nothing comes to a vote that's not guaranteed to pass, so who cares if you have the most progressive voting record there. I feel like we should make that mean something. And I feel like in doing that, we can also show voters in some states like West Virginia who they voted for.
Yep.
They may be okay with that. But I've learned some interesting things about Joe Manchin, I feel like. Like, first of all, I think Kristen Sinema is sticking her neck out beyond where she should be at the
moment.
She's,
yeah.
Because her state is currently not polling with her on these specific issues that she's sticking her neck out on. Joe Manchin, I am learning, is not as predictably moderate as I thought. He is just caught between two extreme demographics, voting demographics. And I feel like we could be exploiting that better by framing everything as a working class issue and forcing him to make decisions about working class issues that will get him in hot water with his voters.
Yeah.
Because West Virginia is a state that wants to have jobs again, first of all.
For sure.
They want to have unions again. They want to have all of these things again that we also would like for us.
Yes.
So let's do it.
Yeah, no state in the union is going to benefit more from this $1.9 trillion, I would assume, probably than West Virginia, right? I mean.
I agreed.
Yeah.
In any case, Biden also gave an address, I guess, as the beginning of his goodwill tour about this that I couldn't watch because I've learned something, which is I can't watch the man speak even when I know it's going to be fine because I find it too stressful.
Well, and I thought about this too because I was texting you during it and you were sort of like not really having it or whatever. And I, you know, knowing what you like and don't like and who you like and don't like, but also just sort of like broadly, like this was not for you.
No.
Right?
Definitely
like
not.
A presidential address by Joe Biden was like you were best suited to not watch that. You didn't need to watch that, right?
I didn't need to watch it.
And I didn't really need to watch it. I sort of like enjoy a political theater moment more than you do, I think, a lot of times.
Totally. You do.
And the one thing that I will say about it is that I totally understand why you don't like it. And I think for some people need that. And you don't. And I don't really either. Yeah. But I sort of like it as just sort of like a thing to watch. But like, I do think that it was effective in the way that a lot of people, you know, that we have certainly been lacking over the last 4 years, but even lacking just sort of like around, you know, COVID-19. I mean, I think that he spoke very eloquently about it and really spoke to people sort of like talking about like what they've lost and you know, at like even leaning right. into the lectern and stuff, like doing things that are like actually effective. That a lot, there are people in the country who do need that or who do like that and who do feel
well,
like
also who
that,
for whom
that is like a, the leader that we need right now. And you're not that think, person, yeah, but they exist.
There is like a group of people that are not also the reason that kind of political messaging resonates with them and doesn't resonate with me is because I hear what is not being said in that like too loudly. You know, when he talks about empathy, I get up in arms because I'm like, empathy is zero children in poverty. Empathy is having access to healthcare. Right. Like, if you aren't in favor of 100% of people having that, then you actually don't have empathy. Whereas I see why the theater of that, if you're not like hung up on those kinds of things,
right,
is comforting. It's like I feel like also remember when he announced Build Back Better was going to be his campaign slogan, and I was just like, right, those are it's like a Selena Meyer slogan.
Yeah.
Like it
new
feels
Selena
like a
now.
Campaign slogan, but it doesn't mean anything.
Uh-huh.
I feel like a lot of the time political rhetoric is intentionally meaningless and intentionally
totally.
Comforting in tone and intentionally and
yep.
Because I am so sensitive to that distinction, get angry from it where other people yeah. are like, oh, a competent person has come who is speaking a language we are familiar with, who presents like a president.
Yes.
Like, I think there's something about my lack of ability to handle leadership in any context, including in work environments
no,
and other
I think
places
that, makes sense. Yeah,
that
totally.
Is related to it, because I just like
yep.
can't trust a man at a lectern telling me in nonsense words that we should be nicer to, like that, you know, that we care about each other. Like I also understand why that messaging is important
yeah.
as a sort of broader messaging, you know, strategy.
Yeah. I also,
in any case, so many people told me to watch it and I was like, you guys don't want me to watch it.
No,
I will tear it apart. You will hate me
yeah.
for it. Don't
yes.
let me watch it.
No, don't watch it. No, don't watch it. Don't watch it. I feel like the big takeaway for everyone, though, was that he said that he's ordering states to open vaccines up to everyone by May 1st, which I think was actually really smart on his part, because he even
yeah.
followed it up by saying that doesn't mean you'll be able to get one on May 1st. So, like, he even covered his ass a little bit here. But, like, I was joking with somebody the other day. I was like, you could say that everyone is eligible now. There's only so many vaccines and there's only so many appointments available.
Everyone's
you know, like,
eligible for boats. Everyone's
right.
eligible for everything.
Right.
Just like...
Actually. Right.
You can be eligible
right.
for anything.
Right. Well, it's like the whole sort of like, you know, like having access to healthcare, you know, like
yeah.
everyone
has
access to healthcare, right? Like it's
and
there.
And they're going to have access to
there's
the vaccine
There's healthcare agencies
too.
Out there. Like
right.
you can access them on the internet, on the phone,
right?
Like, however you want. But like
right.
you can't pay for them, then you don't really
right.
have access
You can't
to
afford them, but you
right.
can access them. That's, I feel like also a smart, first of all, I am impressed with how seriously they are taking the obligation to just get the vaccines distributed quickly and effectively. I knew he would be good at that. He
yep.
is doing a good job of that.
And there's political power that will come from that if he is able
yes.
to do this also. And that is why it's
and
so
And that was
smart.
Incredibly
Besides
important.
The fact, you know, it's obviously good for a million
well,
different
smart,
reasons.
Just
it's
as
good
an
for,
idea. Right.
It's right. It's
right.
a good idea. It's less people die and
no,
the economy
but
opens back up. But I mean,
it,
like...
It makes him look effective. It
yes.
makes him look powerful. It makes him look like he cares about us. Like,
right.
I think... the sort of symbolism of doing that is incredibly important. And I think he knew that coming in. And I did trust, among the many things I don't trust him on, this was an area where I did trust that his experience might
Same.
Be a valuable asset to us. And he has been delivering on that for
yep.
sure.
Yep.
And that is important and also lucky for us that somebody did. Because,
right, no.
But also, a way to make sure that vaccines happen quickly is to make it so that everyone can get one easily without, like, I think there is a time to try to prioritize vaccines early on when the demand is so high that you have to segment the demand.
Yeah.
But when you start to get to the point where you're having to convince hesitant people to do it, you have to make it so easy for them to do it that
yes.
they can just accidentally be caught by a vaccine at CVS while they're just trying to buy, you know, tampons, and
right.
then they have it. Like, you need it to be so available that they can get it by accident.
Yep.
And without them being eligible, it will never become that available quickly. And
right.
also, there's going to be just, like, people who never figure out the vaccine system who are going to be last because they couldn't figure out how to get an appointment that was unlucky and stupid or whatever. But you want the people around them to be vaccinated.
Right.
You know? I mean, you want to get in there. You want those 20-somethings that are going to hanging out at each other's houses no matter what to stop giving it to their grandparents. In any case, New York State and California actually are having some real governor dramas.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted, is there a connection? And I said, yes, there's obviously a connection. The biggest, most unforgiving cities are in these two states. The governors came out with a bang and then had huge scandals take them down. Like, of course there's a connection. Everyone's feeling really insecure. And who feels more insecure than urban residents when the cost of living is $1 trillion and, you know, there's no help on the horizon. And we've been under the harshest lockdowns for the longest time and whatever. And somebody just responded wrong to my tweet. And I was like, this is the lamest troll I've ever gotten on. But in any case, everyone's now calling for Cuomo to resign.
Yes.
Gillibrand and Schumer are now.
People were waiting, I think, on Gillibrand just since she's who you have to wait on in instances like this.
This is her wheelhouse, though. She should have been out there early.
Right.
But also a bunch of members of Congress did as well.
Most of like the New York congressional delegation.
And
already we talked, I think, last week about how like many Democrats, you know, in the New York State House had already done so. So,
yeah, I've been hearing also just like locally here a lot of people complaining like, oh, this is just people whining. These allegations aren't serious enough. And I just want to put something out here that I want everyone to take in before we worry that Cuomo is being taken down in an unfair manner. The reason this is working is because everyone hates working with him and he's abusive to everyone, including the men that work for him. It's an abusive environment. There is only one way to get media traction with an abuse story. And this is how these are the stories that currently can get you traction is if you have a bunch of women come and say, I was made uncomfortable. Now, that definitely did happen because he's an asshole. But I'm just saying that if a bunch of male aides came together and said that he was being mean to them, you would have also said that they should toughen up. So when we start to complain about the fact that we don't understand why with allegations that aren't that serious like this, you know, I've been hearing people say that a lot, why all of these politicians came out against him, it is because he's been abusive to he's a bully and he's been abusive to literally every single person in state government and probably federal government, and nobody wants him to keep his job. And the traction that you're able to get is the traction you run with when you have someone like this that everyone wants gone. So don't wonder to yourself why this is picking up traction. The answer is in the question. There is no, I dislike that people are acting like this must be the extent of the problem. And if you don't think this is problematic, and by the way, it is. Like these allegations are problematic. I'm not suggesting that they're not problematic enough. I'm just saying that if you are thinking to yourself, these allegations aren't problematic enough, just know that this is the tip of a very large iceberg. And it's an iceberg that wouldn't have resonated with you without these being the first allegations. So just like know that to yourself.
Well, and I think they're up to something like, you know, 30 or 40 people who have not, you know. Yes. So like,
well, and also and these are the kind of allegations that when they happen to you, they feel like, what did I do? And, you know, like they're the kind of allegations that make you feel like it was your fault until you hear 30 other women say, no, wait, this wasn't right.
Yeah.
So it's not when you're especially with sexual harassment allegations. It's really challenging to come forward. It's challenging because the entire society gaslights you into thinking everything was your fault. It's challenging to decide that a line was crossed.
Yeah.
And a line was repeatedly.
Yep.
Also, one more thing, though. There's a hilarious article somewhere that was printed today about how the reason he's not going to resign is because he doesn't own any other real estate, so he has to stay in the governor's mansion. As if no one's ever heard of renting.
That's so funny.
That was like all of the responses to it were like, he can't rent.
As if the Cuomos like couldn't muster up an amount of money to purchase a property.
So, I did see a response that was like, his brother has a finished basement. Famously so.
Yeah. Right.
In case.
Oh, man.
What a time.
Guys, exciting stuff happened last week in Nevada. Like, real crazy stuff. Basically, entire state party is now run by DSA-backed people who ran for positions that...
It's glorious.
It's so good. And I want to say, like, good for them. Besides the fact that I'm just, like, excited about this for obvious reasons. But it's also, like, you know, this is what happens when you bully people, by the way. Because this all started back in, really, 2015. And then certainly as a fallout from... the caucuses where the Sanders people really felt like they got bullied there. There was that whole sort of thing. Remember from that meeting after, like at the with the delegate meeting or whatever, where like people accused the Sanders people of like being violent and stuff, which everyone in the room was like, well, that didn't happen. But
the wimpiest anyway, people on the
you know,
planet.
And so they had been working for a long time. Like, you know, they got people elected to like local party leadership. You know, the woman I think who is now running the state party is had been elected to the Clark County. I think she was running the Clark County
Democrats.
Right, she's
been in party leadership at other levels, so she's not just like a rando.
Right, exactly. And so they really put all of these people, you know, it's been a long, not that long, I guess, really. They did it, I guess, sort of quickly, really. But I mean, they've been at this at least for like 5 or 6 years now, and it was because they felt like they were getting the shaft. So, like, if you don't want this to happen in your state, maybe you should stop being assholes to the left.
Well, the staff of the party continued to be assholes to the left. Because this is Harry Reid's Democratic Party, I want to point out.
Yeah, it's the Reid machine.
Nevada's Democratic Party is a machine.
It has a fucking name.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and so the staff of the party quit and stole all the money and gave it to DSCC.
Yeah, they hate the left so much they bankrupt their own state party.
Yeah. And they're starting, I think they're starting a shadow party.
I think it was something like just shy. It was like $400,000 that they moved to the DSCC, which like, if you're really looking to waste a bunch of money, then you give it to the
DSCC. I mean, that's a place to just bury money underground and never see it again.
Right.
It's just like pouring gasoline on your money.
Yeah. But anyway.
But
God,
first of all, do this to your own party.
Well,
you also, American, have a local Democratic Party or Democrats Abroad, which is basically run by progressives anyway. But you could do this to your own local party.
Yep.
Just go in there and take over. And if they try to run away with the money, raise different money.
Well, I mean,
don't
to a
let
degree,
get away
we've
with
sort
that.
Of done that here in California. I mean, we've elected so many, like, that was really, has been a big priority of the left here, is electing delegates. This is how you see, this is why the state party isn't endorsing Dianne Feinstein any longer, right?
It
because,
is
like, we have sent so many delegates, you know, we don't have a ton of them in, like, party leadership in the state necessarily yet, but, like, you know, you can get some shit done by
a bunch of county committee seats became very competitive in New York in the last few years, which is hilarious because there have been times that my parents have been begged to join the county committee. Like, it used to be impossible to get people to join the county committee, and right. Now it's like everywhere there are like highly competitive races in a lot of cities, and it's because the party has a lot of power.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Well, and I've been seeing this, you know, I mean, we're DSA members and I, you know, usually I read all the emails that I get from them and they're always sending out emails for like with voter guides for like community organizations and things like that. I mean, like this is really sort of like how you build power. And I think this Nevada example is a really great example of that because like these are people who literally just sort of like started as delegates or sort of were like, you know, like you said, had worked in state government but were like a little bit further to the left and really just sort of like they figured out a coordinate, you know. And there's a lot of people who are now concerned because it's like well, do they really know what they're doing? Can they run this organization? Can they run elections? We have competitive Catherine Cortez Mastro is running for re-election in 2022 and it's like, bitch, they just snatched all of your jobs. So like
right?
Maybe they fucking know what they're
maybe
doing.
Maybe they can. Right. That's what you do when you are when you're the technocrat who lost your job because
know,
people
right?
wanted
These
idea
people.
These people
don't know what they're doing.
They're not
what?
Technocrats like me.
Maybe they know exactly what they're doing, which is why you don't have a job any longer.
Exactly.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's
anyway.
Glorious. Also glorious. Nina Turner is officially running for an open seat because Marsha
right.
Fudge finally got confirmed.
Right. I mean, she had announced that she was running, but like it was all sort of contingent
right.
on Marsha Fudge being confirmed right. and people thought that she would, but you know, she's also sort of a bit of a progressive. So that could have been one
yeah.
that Republicans might have made a stink about, but now she was officially confirmed last week. So
yeah.
like that seat is open. And I bet that gets nasty, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, for sure. But it's going to be very like, operatic too. Like the whole thing is going to be very dramatic, which
yeah.
is because Nina Turner is dramatic. And
yes.
that's what I'm here for.
Yes.
You know,
because
I want
more than I think literally any other member of the squad who I still all love, but like Nancy Pelosi doesn't want Nina Turner anywhere near the House of Representatives.
That because is going
Nina
to
Turner
be...
is not trying to get elected to Congress to make friends. She didn't come here to make friends, right. Nina Turner.
She didn't come to any political meeting to make friends, in fact.
No.
There's not one single political gathering that she's attended to make friends.
Right.
So.
Right. That's not to say that she's not perfectly lovely.
No, that is to say that she is an activist and that, right. And they already can't stand Rashida. So, right. And she's the sort of most kind of direct activist-y among right. the squad. This is just, this would be too exciting for the drama and fun of it all.
So I think that primary is going to get contested. It wouldn't surprise me if some D-trip money gets into the hands
accidentally
of whoever is running
thrown
against
into,
Nina Turner, right? Even though they claim that these are types of primaries that they would stay out of. But
right. It'll be a former Republican running against her, and they will still somehow try to primary her out of it.
Right, exactly.
And she's not someone who is going to let that happen without announcing it. And so,
I mean, hello.
And then we're all going to have to donate because it's going to be too fun.
I already
and
have.
And then, well, I mean, you know, that's of course. That's,
we'll have to donate again.
I think I donated to, I think I did, I think I donated when she first announced.
Yeah.
Or if I didn't, I set up some sort of, maybe I donated to Justice Democrats when she announced. I can't remember. In any case, my point is that there's going to be, I think, an exciting opportunity to be part of a fundraising trolling exercise, which is something I love to do. I love to see it. I love to be a part of it. Minneapolis taxpayers, we have something to talk about with you.
Right.
One way that you could be ensuring more effective city services for the entire city of Minneapolis is if your police could stop shooting and killing unarmed Black people.
Yes.
Because you are paying literally millions upon millions of dollars in settlements, rightfully. I mean...
Yep.
You know, we learned what the George Floyd settlement for Minneapolis was going to be this week. It was $27 million and then $500,000 for the neighborhood where he was arrested. But just last or 2 years ago, the city paid $20 million to another family.
Yes.
So
to an unarmed woman. Wasn't Black. Not that it matters. But I mean, well, I mean, it
no,
does
but
matter,
I mean, like,
I mean,
don't be shooting or killing any unarmed people because then you have to pay millions of dollars to their families.
Yes, and I know. A lot of these people who probably are, a lot of racist people in Minneapolis are probably also going around talking about how they don't want their taxpayer dollars wasted.
That's right.
Right? And
yeah,
one
that
way
feels
that
like an area of overlap.
Right, exactly. Yes, it's the same crowd, right?
Right. a good way to get those potholes filled would be to stop murdering people in the streets for no reason.
Such a great idea.
I mean, so I think that something to, someone could, I could run on that. Yeah. We could fill more potholes.
Yeah, but I think that is one of the larger civil or payments in settlements. Yeah, so that's
well
that's
certainly
great,
in this
obviously
run
they deserve,
of
they deserve every penny they get, right? I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely. But
and more.
Certainly, like this feels like maybe a way to spin not killing unarmed people of any color, but especially unarmed Black people, because that seems to be a frequent problem.
Yes.
In any city, just as a cost savings measure. Right. If you don't care about their humanity, maybe you'll care about your tax dollars being wasted.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing has wasted just millions of Minneapolis tax dollars.
Yeah.
They wasted it because they had to figure out, you know, they had to have all those protests and then they had to have the police response to those protests. I mean, think about the amount of money Minneapolis has spent trying to justify killing George Floyd.
Yep.
You don't have to kill him. No one had to die.
Yeah,
and then
that.
All that money, potholes, directly to the potholes. So in any case, thoughts to think about taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tucker Carlson's been canceled about 12 times in the last month.
How is he still on television?
Losing track of, I thought he was not still on television. And then I found out that he was and that he is now, I guess it was What's-His-Face, the other bowtie guy that got kicked off television and I was mixing them up. You know.
There's another bowtie person?
Piers Morgan.
Oh, God. Oh yeah.
He was canceled
last week.
He got re-kicked
off or quit himself. I don't know. Whatever he did. But
he was re-canceled last week.
Yeah.
And then Tucker Carlson, who is sort of like a carbon copy of him, arrived on the scene just in time to make like a weirdly sexist comment about military uniforms and grooming standards that no one has ever needed to make or hear about. Right. Basically, so Monday was International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. This is Women's History Month. We're just a lot of women stuff going on this month. Joe Biden on International Women's Day introduces a bunch of female nominees for combat commands and whatever. And then also talks about the military updating grooming standards to allow some of the like hairstyles and things that are more common with women that were making it annoying to be a woman in the military, like not allowing ponytails and things like that. And Tucker Carlson apparently took great offense to the idea that the military would allow different hairstyles than the current hairstyles being allowed, or that women would be wearing uniforms at all, I guess. I don't know. Because he said that while China's military has become more masculine, our military needs to become, as Joe Biden says, more feminine. Now, the equation, the equating of masculinity with strong military policy and femininity with weak military policy is problematic in and of itself.
Right.
But the idea that by allowing women to wear ponytails, we are making the military more feminine is a curious assertion. I don't know.
It's crazy. Well, and this was met with, I mean, the reaction was across the board here. I mean, like,
yeah, and the military was like, fuck off.
Yeah, I was going to say the Pentagon, like, came for him. But also, like, so did many Republicans who are just sort of like, what are, like, no.
What are we talking about here? Yeah.
Just no.
Yeah.
But then Tucker Carlson hilariously, like, said that there was, like, some sort of, like, you know, there was, like, some big conspiracy against him that, like, the Pentagon had started. And it was just sort of like, first off, nobody, there's no conspiracy against you because nobody has the time.
Or cares about you personally.
About you. Right, exactly. Right. For you. It was funny. CNN had that, what was that, their lower third about it. Oh, it was Fox propaganda host, you know, wrongly claims conspiracy against him or something
like
that. I just
how bold CNN has gotten in the last 4 years.
It was so good.
I did not see this transition happening the way it did. Like, everyone was watching MSNBC 4 years ago thinking, when will CNN learn? MSNBC became like a tool of like the corporate center. Yep. And CNN just went like balls to the wall crazy in that time. It's now just like up to shenanigans 100% of the time.
I feel like there's still a lot of CNN watchers who, like, just don't know. And I'm trying to tell them. But
well, there's a lot of people who started watching MSNBC 5 years ago and just, like, can't change their routine. Yeah. And then there's a lot of CNN watchers who the shift happens so sort of quietly and imperceptibly that they don't realize that what they are now watching is hilarity.
Yeah.
But also better hilarity. They do better coverage now that they're so crazy than they used to. And certainly better than MSNBC. We know I hate MSNBC.
Well, and MSNBC, but I think, like, what I think a lot of people, you know, because I used to watch MSNBC too. And I think that, like, what has happened there has been sort of like a slow progression of, you know, because MSNBC used to, you know, Ed Schultz had a primetime show on MSNBC. Right. You know, Keith Olbermann had a show on primetime MSNBC. And these guys were all, and others too, I'm forgetting people. But, like, you know, now you have to watch, you know, What's Her Nuts, who used to work in the Bush administration, and you have to watch Joy Reid, who's a fucking hack, who also shouldn't be on television, by the way. Don't get me started on Joy Reid. You know, I think that it has been this sort of, like, slow progression into, like, where we are now, where, like, the king of the world on MSNBC is fucking Steve Schmidt, right? And, and like, and so it's weird, you know, we don't have to digress into a commentary on CNN versus MSNBC because we, I feel like we do it at least once a month.
I did learn something fascinating about ratings, though, in the cable news world recently, because I was looking at an infographic about how much viewership they've all lost since the end of the Trump administration. I certainly do my best not to ever turn any of them on. but did you know that Lawrence O'Donnell has more viewers than Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo and Anderson Cooper and every other CNN show on the planet? Lawrence O'Donnell is, like, not even a compelling person. Like, I get Rachel Maddow has, like, her own thing. She has, like, a little cottage industry of, like, over-explaining things to you. I find the show slightly unwatchable these days because she takes one story that is the minor detail of a more important story and goes on about it for 22 minutes. But like, look, God bless her, she tries. Lawrence O'Donnell is not offering that level of insight into anything.
No.
He is a person who is just, like, a generic DC hack who has a show where he offers little to no insight other than inviting a bunch of hacks like Steve Schmidt on to talk about shit with him. Mm-hmm. And then also doesn't really report the news either. He's just sort of like a person who spends an hour on TV.
Yeah.
And he is also a person who, no matter what he tells you about his background, is working at a non-union shop. All of these people on MSNBC are working at a non-union shop. That is its own drama to me, personally. Because I feel like you already know CNN is corporate news, so of course they're working at a non-union shop. Yeah. MSNBC is like trying to play you on both ends. They're putting Ana Navarro and Steve Schmidt on your television. They're working at a non-union shop, and they're trying to tell you they're the progressive news, and they are not. In any case, let's talk about dogs in the White House.
Please. Let's do it.
They're not anymore. So, right. Story
Major's
over.
Major's not anymore.
Major's gone because of an incident.
Yes.
So they're rescue dogs, so maybe they have incidents. I don't know. Maybe they're trauma.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like
trauma,
that's
dog trauma.
Just because they moved to a new place and there's a million different new people around. I mean, like, it doesn't mean that the dog needs to be put down, for God's sake. It means that, like, it just wasn't prepared for, you know, what was about to happen. That's as
right. Much so he's back in Delaware.
Yeah.
Just doing whatever dogs
it's
do in
fine.
Delaware.
But of course that, you know, was tax like havens. Any sign of scandal, you know, it's like this was a huge deal.
Yeah, they had
to talk about it at multiple, you know, press conferences or like Jen Psaki has spent
briefings,
a lot
of
the week talking about fucking Major Biden, which is like everybody needs to settle down about Major Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like while this huge like bill that was incredible, like an incredible success was going through, what America was talking about was Major Biden and Oprah and Meghan Markle.
I know.
Which,
Lot of news about Oprah and Meghan Markle and the royals. And
here's something that I think we should all agree to know moving forward. The monarchy in Britain is an inherently racist proposition because they are not even willing to marry in other white people from different bloodlines.
Right.
So am I shocked to hear that they made racist comments about Archie? No, I'm not. And also, you should not be either.
Right. Also, colonialism, anyone? I mean.
Right. Like, if you're wondering why we have such a fucked up American, you know, racial dynamic here.
Yeah, we learned from the best.
Thanks to this very monarchy. So it's not fair or it's not great to have your own family treat you that way. And I understand why Meghan Markle was like, fuck this. And I understand why they kind of left the royal family. Like, I get why they're upset about it. That's totally fair. Absolutely worth talking about as a problem that they are experiencing. If you are a person, though, who is expressing shock and horror at the idea that the monarchy would stoop to such a level, I want you to think about your own thoughts about why you, an American, is caring about the British monarchy, full stop. Because one of the glories of being American, one of the few remaining, is that we are the British subjects that did get away. We are not in the Commonwealth. She is not our queen. Right. We do not have a queen. We should never want a queen. So, like, maybe we could just let them be horrible elsewhere. Yeah. But also, this is what monarchies bring you, is racism.
Yeah.
Like, show me all of the other people of color in that family.
Yeah.
Show me the Jewish people in that family. This is just different white people, not in the family either. Like, are they racist? Yes.
Yeah,
that's
obviously
common sense, you guys. We don't have to be shocked and talk about it all week. We could allow Meghan Markle to get off her chest what she wants to get off her chest. Oprah can talk about it if she wants. It was wild how big a billing this interview got, though.
Well, I know, and people were obviously sort of like rightly trying to figure out, you know, there was a whole, I feel like it was like a big detective.
Oh, yeah, we're trying to figure out who in the royal family had made all the racist
in the royal family it was. And I kept going with
everyone.
Well, everyone for sure, but I kept going with Prince William because like they kept talking, like Meghan Markle a few times said that they didn't want to say who specifically it was because it would be damaging to that person. And in my mind, I was like, would it really be damaging to Prince Charles if we found out that like a 72-year-old royal was maybe a little bit racist? I'm like, it seems like it would be more damaging to Prince William because I think for some reason we might expect better of him, even though we shouldn't. Because, but like,
I agree.
Because my brain kept having a hard time processing how up in arms everyone was about the royals maybe being racist.
Yeah, no, which is a very fair concern to have, question to have. Anytime that we get obsessed about the royals, just as in America, I get a little bit confused because I just like honestly could not care less about what they're up to.
Right.
And I believe that one of my great privileges as an American is not having to care what they're up to because they are a figurehead government in a country I don't live in.
Yeah. Yep.
And a country that we have diplomatic relations with them, but the fact that once the monarchy used to be the monarchy here but is no longer,
right,
is actually absolute in our case. It's not like Canada,
yeah,
where they are still the monarchy. They are not our monarchy, so we don't, it's not us. We don't have to care. It's nothing to do with us.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case.
Speaking of racists, though.
Speaking of racists and speaking of surreal news stories, Ted Cruz had a brilliant idea in his ongoing crusade against cancel culture.
Yeah.
As you know, Dr. Seuss is now the latest target of the left's cancel culture. In that, some Dr. Seuss books that are not the famous Dr. Seuss books that no one has read in decades are no longer being published because they have overtly racist language and imagery in them. Great. Times change. Life moves on. You can still read One Fish, Two Fish.
You can. And Green Eggs and Ham. Which is what Ted Cruz is hilariously signing as if he wrote it and then selling copies of them to fundraise from.
He did once recite it on the Senate floor.
That's true, he did. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can pay $60 to have a signed Ted Cruz copy of Green Eggs and Ham.
I know. But the one thing that on his donation page, you know, it said, stand with Ted Cruz and Dr. Seuss against the cancel culture mob to claim your signed copy of Green Eggs and Ham. And I want to say something about that because, you know, I think people have been pointing this out. But like, one thing that I think is maybe being missed in this whole story as we talk about it is that Dr. Seuss canceled himself. I mean, Dr. Seuss is not alive, but like it's the doctor's, because he's not alive, it's the Dr. Seuss Foundation or whatever the fuck it is that oversees the Dr. Seuss publications and takes in the money or whatever. They decided themselves to stop printing these for these reasons.
Right.
So like the left did not cancel Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss canceled Dr. Seuss.
It was self-cancellation.
They self-canceled. Right.
Yeah. And also, like, I would contend that, A, therefore, Dr. Seuss is not standing against cancel culture because Dr. Seuss is
self-canceled. If you want to stand with Dr. Seuss, then you would be standing.
Just don't worry about any of this. Just continue to feel okay about reading Dr. Seuss books to your kids because you no longer can buy the ones that wouldn't be okay to read.
You weren't buying those specific ones to read to
your kids.
I had
never heard of any of the Dr. Seuss books that they canceled.
No.
I asked friends near and far. One friend said they'd heard of one of them.
I know.
Like,
you know what they should have done? Just stopped publishing them and not told anyone, and no one would have known.
Right. It would have never, and just said it was because of low sales. No one was seeking out exceptionally racist Dr. Seuss books.
No.
Like, in any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
If you have a Dr. Seuss book in your possession and it seems like it's not racist, it's safe to keep reading it to your kids. If you do not have a Dr. Seuss book but you would like one, don't spend $60 to get one from Ted Cruz. They are available for under $5 on Amazon. You know, if you want to go back and revisit the time that Ted Cruz referenced Green Eggs and Ham during a filibuster, that's on YouTube.
Days when we actually filibustered.
That's right. The talking filibuster. Mm-hmm. The talking and walking filibuster.
Seems like Joe Manchin is maybe in favor of bringing that back, by the way.
I support that 100%.
Same.
There's nothing I want more than nothing but filibusters.
Yep.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.